Vayavo b'nei Yisrael kol ha'edam midbar tzin. The entire congregation comes, they arrive midbar tzin b'chodesh harishon, in the first month. Now, one of the things that very quiet is not said, is not spelled out, is that the 40 years have now elapsed. We're now at a different place chronologically. And with that, we're told, Vayeshev ha'am b'kadesh, they stay in a place called Kadesh. But Tamat Shem Miriam, so just notice that the month is the first month, it's Nisan, so Miriam dies in Nisan. And there are traditions in terms of Midrashim, exactly what date that she died, but the date is not given here. But Tamat Shem Miriam, v'tikaver sham, and she dies and she passes away, and she's buried there. V'lo yamayim la'ida, and there was no water for the Idah. Now this is one of the ideas which support, one of the places that supports the idea, or maybe even creates the idea, that there was this thing called Be'er Miriam, that the water was there, Bischut Miriam. Once you understand this as a theme, it goes back all the way to her accompanying her brother and not being able to turn her back on her brother. Because of this, perhaps, she has this connection with water, and the water flows because of her. Now, when she's died, now there's no water. So therefore, her death being juxtaposed to the lack of water, therefore creates this idea, at least gives us a source for this idea, that the water in the desert was due to Miriam. Vayikalu al Moshe v'al Haron, and the people gathered on Moshe and on Aaron, which sounds a little violent. They gathered upon them. Previously, I quoted the Alshech, quoted the Yalkut Shimoni, that says that Aaron looks up and sees the people coming towards them and says, oh, wow, this is beautiful. Why? Because they were sitting Shiva for their sister. This is during the Shiva. And during the Shiva, Aaron looks up, look, all the people are coming to comfort us. And Moshe looks up and says, they're not coming to comfort us. This is the angry mob that is coming towards us. And unfortunately, of course, Moshe was right. And I've always find that teaching so tragic. Vayarev ha'am im Moshe. So that part's interesting as well. They gather in front of Moshe and Aaron, so Moshe understands them, and they quarrel with Moshe. Vayomru, and they say, Lamor saying, V'lu gavanu v'gvachinu lefnei Hashem, and had we only died, V'lama haveitem et kal Hashem l'midbar hazeh lamut sham anachnu be'ereinu, why have you brought us to this desert to die, us and our flock? V'amad l'itonu mimitzrayim, why do you even take us out of Egypt? You know, this is a good way to say thank you. L'vi otonu makom ra hazeh, you've brought us to this terrible place. No, and by the way, the subtext could be not just that there's no water, it could be the death of Miriam was something which was impactful for them as well. Loma kom zero te einav getri monomayim ein lishtot. And there's none of these. We're not seeing the land with flows of milk and honey. We don't see any of these perot of Eretz Yisrael. Rather, what we have is a situation where there's no water. V'yavo Moshe v'ar b'nei kahal. Now Moshe and Aaron come in front of the people. Apetach ha'omoid v'yiplu apneim, and they fall down. And we'll assume that this means prayer. V'yar kvod Hashem aleihem, and God appears in front of him. V'deber shem Moshe leimor, and God says to Moshe, Kacha tamateh, take the staff. There's a little discussion which staff. Vakal et ha'eda ata ve'aron, and gather the people together, you and Aaron. So therefore, Moshe was given instructions to bring the staff, but he's told the gathering would seem to be him and Aaron, but you'll see in a second how we parse this sentence is not that simple. So I want to read it again from the beginning. Kach et hamate, which is in the singular, take the staff. Vakal et ha'eda, and gather the people, atav aron achicha, vidibartem elasela. And over here, vidibartem is also plural, and you both shall speak to the rock, le'inehem, in front of the people, but atan meimav, and then the rock will give forth its water. And take water from this rock, and then give to the congregation, and give to the flock as well. V'yikach Moshe etamateh b'fnei Hashem kasher tzivau. Moshe takes the staff from in front of God as he was commanded. So far everything is good. Ve'akilu Moshe v'Aaron etakal el pnei asela, and then the two of them gather the people in front of the rock. Ve'yomu lahem, but only Moshe speaks. Shim'una, listen, hamorim, you rebellious people, hamin asela zeh notzi l'chamayim, will we be able to take water forth from this rock? Ve'yere Moshe et yado, Moshe lifts up his hand, Vayach et hasela b'mateo pamayim, and he hits the rock twice. Vayitzu mayim rabim v'teish tedav yiram, and a great deal of water comes out, and he gives to the congregation and to the flock to drink. We then have what's an unexpected end, because till now it sounds, I know that there was obvious deviations, but the results worked. Mission accomplished. Water was found, and water, therefore, the thirst, the problem was solved, and everything should be good. But Yomer Hashem El Moshe Ve'el Aaron, Moshe said, God says to Moshe and Aaron, Ya'an lohem mantem bi lahakti sheni l'nei b'nei Yisrael, because you didn't believe in me to sanctify me in front of the eyes of the children of Israel. And right there, we need to understand that. I mean, Moshe didn't have emunah, Moshe didn't have faith. So you didn't believe in me, but that's, again, not enough in order to sanctify me in front of the eyes of the people. L'chein lo taviu et ha'kahal hazeh, therefore you're not bringing in this congregation, el ha'aretz asher natati lahem, into the land which I've given to them. Hema mei meriva, this is the waters. Now the question over here, what does the word meriva mean? So we can say it's the waters of quarreling. Asher ravu b'nei Yisrael et Hashem, where the children of Israel quarreled with God, Vekadesh Bam, and they were sanctified there. Now, what's fascinating is it actually seems to be accusing the people of doing something wrong, because at the very end says, it's Mei Meriva, Asher Ravu B'nei Yisrael at Hashem. The people were guilty of something. So now, if the people are guilty of something, you know, why is Moshe getting this punishment, or Moshe and Aaron for getting this punishment? And maybe even the stronger question is, why is Aaron getting this punishment? Because they both gather the people, and then Moshe says what he says, and Moshe hits. So what exactly did Aaron do which is wrong? And that we will try to come back to. What I want to start with today is to look at the perspective, first of all, of a couple of different places in the Chumash. Now, we have to be careful with each one. So, for example, when Moshe recounts what happened in Sefer Devarim, Moshe is telling us from his perspective. When God makes an editorial comment and tells us a certain thing, both by the death of Aaron, by the death of Moshe, a couple of times, we're going to see God said. But I want to start, actually, in source number two, with what it says in Sefer Tehillim, which we can ascribe to David HaMelech. Vayiktsifu al mei meriva, they angered, over here my English translation gave it a capital H, which means they angered God. Vayiktsifu al mei meriva, they got God angry, which is really at the very end of what was said, Asher ravu b'nei Yisrael et Hashem, so therefore they got God angry. Vayera l'moshe bavuram, and Moshe ended up suffering because of them. So this is really an interesting read on this, because I'm going to say it again. There are these other verses I want to get to as we move on, but this seems to be quite clear. Yes, Moshe gets punished, but why does Moshe get punished? Because the people ended up doing something which is wrong. Ki himru et rucho, my English translation here is, for they embittered his spirit, vayivate bisfatav, and then he spoke inappropriately, you know, with his lips, spoke rashly with his lips. So this, again, I don't know if you agree with me. I just think this is a fascinating soundbite of a recounting of what exactly went wrong. The people did something wrong. The people acted inappropriately. The people pushed Moshe, and Moshe says something that he perhaps shouldn't have, which is interesting because there are many, many interpretations as far as what exactly was the sin. Famously, the Rambam says the sin is because Moshe gets angry. I guess you can claim that, but it's not exactly what it says over here. There are those who say it's that what Moshe said, what Moshe didn't say, what that Moshe hit the rock, that Moshe hit the rock twice. If Moshe hit the rock twice, which was the problem, the first time or the second time? And we can go on with the various opinions which exist. But as I said, here is a very nice, succinct way of analyzing what it is that happened, and it does put in some blame, maybe even primarily puts blame on the people. Nonetheless, they caused Moshe his problem. Vayera l'Moshe ba'avoram. So again, this is in Psalms chapter 106, so I think that this is something that needs to be at least taken into consideration. We started in Perek Kaf, and not that much afterwards, we're told about the death of Aaron, still in the same chapter, in chapter 20 in Bamidbar. Yesaf Aaron el Amav, ki lo yavo el Aaretz. Aaron is going to die, but he's not going to enter into land, which I've given to the Jewish people, which is also interesting because that's pretty close to what it said back in the first source. So, right, he's not going to lead them, Moshe and Aaron are not going to lead the people into land, which I gave them, which I've given to them, al asher miritem et pi l'mei meriva. So, also, what we need to do now is to translate and to compare this. Hashem miritem, now that's close to miriva, but not exactly. It would seem to be that the root of the word miritem is, and there's many things to note over here. You have the mar, the bitterness. Actually, the name Miriam is almost in that word itself, which is interesting in terms of the loss of Miriam. I mean, her name is staring at us over here with, of course, the extra tough. But the word meritem over here would most likely mean rebellion. Al Hashem meritem et pi, you rebelled against my words, l'mei meriva, which means, again, the same way that in the verse in Psalms and Tehillim, it says, Vivateh b'sfatav, and again, something comes out of his lips. Over here as well, Hashem meritem et pi, l'mei meriva, because you rebelled against my words. Now, this doesn't quite say it's because of what you said, but what it does say is that you didn't do what I had told you to do. In Source 4, we have a midrash, and we're just going to note this in passing. It says, the Torah always tells us exactly what it is that Moshe and Aaron did in order that they not be accused of all kinds of other things. And again, almost every time we see midrashim like this, I say, halavai, if only that were the case. L'mei meriva, v'lo b'shvil gezel, was because of theft, v'lo b'shvil davar acher, was because of anything else, ela b'shvil mei meriva, the reason they died was mei meriva, but of course you realize the problem. This is why they die, but we don't know exactly what it is that they did. Also, we're going to see along the way, hopefully, that why they died, according to at least some of the commentaries, is so much more complex than we imagine. But with this midrash saying, no, there's nothing else. This is what it is, and we'll see if all agree or to this idea. L'fikach tzarech ha-ketuv l'faret chata'im b'kol makom. That's why it always says what they did. K'dei shelo yomru b'yolam avonot acherot hayu b'adam. So no one else should say, but there were other sins that they had been responsible for. Now, this word miritem, which I described as rebellion, the Targum Onkelos and the Targum Yonatan both describe it as siruv, because you refused. You refused. You didn't do what I told you to do. Well, the best perhaps will be in the Keter Yonatan, which translates it back into English. You refused to follow my orders by this place, by the Mei Meriva, the waters of contention. Source number 8 is in Parshat Pinchas. And here we're told, again, the other side. We're told about Aaron and how his death takes place over here. And now we're told about Moshe's death, even though it's not going to take place yet. Vayomer, source 8, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, God tells Moshe, Alei el har ha'avarim hazeh, Re'eah ta'aretz shenatati l'bnei Yisrael. Come, climb up to the mountain and take a good look at the land again, Asher Natati Levnei Yisrael, the land which I gave the Jewish people. Re'ita ota, you should see it, and then v'nasafta elamecha gam ata, you too will die, kasher nasaf Aaron achicha, the same way that Aaron died, which, by the way, leads us very much in the direction that the sin of both of them should be identical, because it says they're getting the same punishment. There's some kind of equality or between the two of them. Ka'asher miritem pi b'midbar tzin. And again, same description. If you want, there are slightest of nuances which are different, which some of the commentaries think it's significant. I'm not saying it. Ka'asher miritem pi, because you rebelled against my word, b'miratzin b'mirivata ida, when the people were quarreling, l'akdisheni b'mayim l'neim, when there was this opportunity to sanctify me in front of their eyes with the water, Heim mei merivat kadesh min batzin. That is this place called, this is the waters of contention. So yes, you could make slight distinctions, but it really sounds quite similar as far as what it is the problem, because they're guilty of some kind of rebellion. Now, what exactly they did, that we're not told. Source number 9, this, I'm not doing all of this in order, this is now all the way towards the end of the Torah, when Moshe actually will go up and this, he'll go and look at the land of Israel. So when this happens, here God, in Bamidbar Kav Zayin, in source 8, God tells him to do it. In source number 9 is when Moshe actually does it. V'yedaber Hashem Moshe be'etzem hayom hazeh le'mor, alei el har avarim hazeh, har nevo asher be'eretz Moab, asher p'nei b'necho, ure'e et ha'eretz Kanan asher nioten levnei Yisrael l'achuzah. And you should see the land of Canaan, which I'm giving the Jewish, the children of Israel, as a homestead. Umet bahar asher ata olashama vasef el amecha, and you're going to die there. Kaasher met Aaron achicha. Again, you create, it's the same exact words. Kaasher, there it's kaasher nesaf Aaron achicha, and here kaasher met Aaron achicha. It's the same. Bahar har vayosof el amav. Al asher, now it goes to a slight nuance which is different. Ma'al tembi. Now here it uses the word mi'ila, that you were guilty of taking something which is holy for yourselves, alasher ma'altem bi b'toch b'nei Yisrael, b'meim b'ret kodesh, and you were guilty of this mi'ilah, which sometimes could be embezzlement, going back again, asher ma'altem bi b'toch b'nei Yisrael, b'meim b'ret kodesh, b'meim b'ret sin, alasher lo kidashti ot, so again, it uses the same kind of words, the Meimrivat, it's the waters over here of contention, but it switched the word rebellion with the word of Mi'ilah, of taking something inappropriately. Again, it tells us that the problem is Asher lo kidashtem oti, that you did not create this moment of holiness for the Jewish people. So that itself is interesting, because that was not for in every single description of it. That only went back to the first one, Pasuk Yud Bet in Source 1, where it says, Lo imantem lakti sheni le'nei. So you didn't believe in me enough in order to somehow elevate or sanctify me. The most complicated of all of these descriptions is in Source number 10, which is the beginning of Sefer Devarim, the Book of Devarim. Here, it's more complicated because the speech, it's Moshe speaking, as opposed to every time till now has been God speaking. Here it's Moshe speaking, and again, this is Moshe's telling over of what happened. And it's not clear, and I'm going to get a little bit carried away, which I'll tell you exactly how and where, and you can argue with me on this. So I'm jumping into verse 30, Pasuk Lamed, in Source 10, right? First chapter of Devarim. Hashem Elokeichem Olech Lefneichem Hu Yilachem Lechem. That God who walks in front of you, he's the one who will be fighting for you. Kechol Asher Asa Itchem B'Mitzrayim La'Einechem. Just like you saw in front of your eyes. And you realize the eyes, of course, was part of what we had noticed all the way through. Uva Midbar Asher Ita Asher Nasata Hashem Elokeichem Kesher Yisa Ish Et Beno. B'Kol HaDerech Asher Alachtem Ad Bo'achem Ad HaMakom Hazeh. And you've seen the desert, how God has taken care, and God has taken care of all your needs as a father carries his son. So like the beautiful image is a young father carrying a young child, you know, on his shoulders as they're walking. And God carried you and took care of you, and there's love, and it's a very tender description. Now, the only thing about this is, what is Moshe about to introduce? Is he about to introduce the sin of the spies, or is he about to introduce the sin where they quarreled with him about water? And my suspicion, and I'll tell you exactly why this is in a moment or two, my suspicion is it's both. My suspicion, and that's part of what we need to understand at Moshe's speech, and you'll see why I'm saying this in a moment. First of all, what Moshe is saying is that God provides all their needs. Now, if God provides all their needs, why are you getting all worked up? Because there's no water right now. So what do you do to get water? You pray. If you don't have water, you don't say, God is providing everything for them. So pray. We need water right now. There seems to be this very close relationship. Again, a father's carrying a child. What do? When the child needs water, Daddy, I need some water. Fine, no problem. So this is God. That's why I'm saying that even though it would seem to be that this is leading us towards the sin of the spies, so let's just continue. Ha'olech lefneichem b'derech latur lachem makom lachanotchem be'esh laila lotchem b'derech ha'shlechu ba'uvanan yomam. So the word latur, you should recognize that from the sin of the spies. But God is leading us along the way, you know, take us where we need to go to, and we have the clouds and the fire and so on. Vayishma Hashem et kol divreichem, vayiktsof, vayishava limor. But God got upset with you, and so we're saying, im yira ishma Hashem eila dor hara hazeh ta'aretz hatova shenishbati l'tei levoteichem. So now, as much as the context now is clearly what we just now read, is the sin of the spies. And God swore that none of this generation is going to go in. Zulati Kalev ben Yefuneh, hu yirena, v'lo atena ta'aretz asher derach ba ulevanav. I'm going to let Kalev go in, and he's going to receive the land which he walked upon. Yan Hashem ilei acharei Hashem, because he did follow God. And then, Pasuk Lamed Zayin, he adds, gam bi hitanaf Hashem biglalchem. Lemor, and God upset God with me as well. Lemor gam ata lo tov Hashem, and you also won't go there. Now, this combination on Moshe's part of combining together the sin of the sin of the spies together with his sin of hitting the rock does not seem to us immediately to be intuitive. Why is he combining this? What does one thing have to do with the other? So now, on some level, and again, you just have to try to work this out one way or the other. You could say, as some commentators say, no, derech agav, just, you know, in passing, oh yeah, by the way, I'm also getting punished because of you. But it would really turn it into a theological non sequitur, because it has nothing to do with one another. This is not the same sin. Unless, of course, you say that there is a common denominator, and the common denominator is that God provides, God take care, God takes care, God protects, and therefore, one application that you didn't notice this is you insisted on sending the spies, and I agreed with you on that. And then you went and said, okay, we really can't go in, and you didn't have the faith in God that you should have. And on the other hand, this led you to freak out, sorry for lack of a better term, when you didn't have the supplies that you needed, and say, oh no, we have no water and so on. But if you realize that God is taking care of things, so then because of you, which means the because of you is not a comment of the sin of the spies, but the common denominator that led to both of these situations, whereby because you didn't trust in God sufficiently. Now, the reason why that would be so interesting is because God says to Moshe, by the sin of hitting the rock, is because lo hemantem, because you didn't have enough faith in order lahakdisheni, which means that somehow Moshe is getting blamed. But it's interesting because the people are blamed as well. The people quarreled with God, which means Moshe's understanding of this, I think, really is supported by what God said. But it's fascinating how the two of these things get combined together. Before I finish today, I want to come back to this point, and I want to come back to this point via a Ramban, and then I want to say something, if I don't forget what I want to say, which may be quite interesting, but it will all come back to that, how Moshe does combine these two things together. So let's continue then. There's another time or another place that we find that Moshe also gives his take on things, and that is also in Sefer Devarim, in Parshat Ve'etchanan, which means, and I pleaded and I prayed, Ve'etchanan el Hashem Beit Hilimo, and I prayed to God, essentially saying, no, please, can I go into the land of Israel? I'm skipping to Pasuk Kaf Hey. Ebrana ve'eret ha'aretz ha'tova. Let me cross over. Let me see the land. Asher be'eva yaradein. Ha'aratov ha'zeva ha'levanan. Ve'yit'aber Hashem bi lema'anchem v'lo shomaylai. But again, God was upset with me for your sake or because of you and did not listen to me. So again, this is another situation where again God says to him, this is the third time now, again, we're not in the proper order, no, you can't cross. Rather, Alei Rosh HaPiskah V'Sai Necha Yamav Etzvon V'Tema, rather instead you can come up and take a look at it, but you're not crossing over. So again, it's interesting that when Moshe's death is mentioned, which is a couple of different times, three different times we see, each time, you know, Moshe has this wish to go over and God says, no, you're just going to climb up and take a look, but you're not really going over. And each time it does connect to the sin, this is the subtlest of all of them, because it says the least amount and we have to work the hardest to understand it. In source number 12, we're going to find a really interesting argument. We're not going to see the whole thing. We're only going to see one side of it. You're going to have to trust me that there's an argument about this. When Moshe and Aaron get punished, what exactly is the punishment? So the punishment is they can't cross into the land of Israel. So here's my question. Was the entire punishment that they couldn't cross over? Now listen to the other side of it. Or, perhaps, is part of the punishment is that they were supposed to live longer than they lived, and because they can't go over, so now they died before their allotted time. which means do Moshe and Aaron, because of what has happened, do they die early or not? Which means, is the punishment that they die early and therefore they can't cross over? Or because they can't cross over, they live the amount of time they're supposed to live, but they just can't cross over. So what exactly is the punishment? That we're going to find is actually discussed and is an argument in this Midrash. So again, we're just going to see a little part of it now. Source 12. Al Hashem miritem pi b'midbar mirivah b'midbar sin. Rav Shimon ben Elazar Omer, af Moshe v'Aaron b'hi karet metu. They died of what was being called here karet, which means they were cut off, which means they were cut off early, and they did not live their proper years, which means they died before they were supposed to die. And then it continues, and it stresses this was the only sin, and Moshe requests to write down the sin so no one thinks it's anything else. And this is the source, if you need to see that you can see in the fourth line. Moshe Amar, Yichtov Surchani, write down what I did wrong. Shenemar al Hashem iritem pi b'midbar sin b'virat ha'idah l'akdisheni. And it goes and gives an example by you can have two people punished, and the observers can think they did the same thing. He says, no, make sure they understand that one was guilty of a severe crime and one a more minor crime, and Moshe is requesting that God lets people know. So I said this Midrash carries on a bit, but the Al-Sheikh is going to identify both sides of the argument, and that's in source number 13. We have him on Pasuk Kaf Gimel, and then again on Pasuk Kaf Dalet. On Kaf Gimel, he talks about Hashem Meritim, right? You didn't have the... Over here it says the reason, again, it's in two different places in Parshat Chukat. Once it says, Hashem miritem, and that's by Aaron's death, while previously it said, Lohem mantem. So which is it? Is it one of rebellion or one of lack of belief? Of course you can tell me there's a common denominator and somehow those are connected, but nonetheless, which one is it? And then he quotes for us the Midrash that we just now saw. And the question is, Amnam, hinei yadua machloket rabotenu. It's well known, the argument. Maybe you didn't know it before today. Imetu kodem zman al oto avon. Did they die early because of this sin? Vayoter tzodeku ki loya onesh rak ki abia el aretz af bizman ametu. And the Al-Sheikh doesn't like the other approach. He doesn't like thinking the thought that maybe they died before their days, and there is some concept of karet for Moshe and Aaron. It's such a frightening thought. But rather, it says, no, they died the day that they were supposed to die. And the only point is they couldn't go over. I do want to point something out, and we'll come back to the Al-Sheikh, that, you know, there is a third death in the parsha that we needed to pay attention to. By the way, aside from the 39 years of death, which is in the parsha, which is sort of hinted at. But the other death is Miriam. So do we ever ask that question? Hold it. Why did Miriam die? Or why did Miriam die when she died? Why did Aaron die? Why does he die when he dies? If Aaron and Moshe do the exact same thing and they're both going to die, why don't they both die the same day? You're both guilty of the same crime. They have the same lawyer, perhaps, and they get the same sentence. They should both be put together on the same day. So the fact that they don't die at the same time, but rather there's a time lag between them, where you have Miriam. Now, we saw that she dies in Nisan, and then we're going to see that Aaron will die on Rosh Chodesh Av. I believe it's the only death in Chumash, which is told, the date is given, where he dies on Rosh Chodesh Av. And Moshe's death, where we don't know the exact date, but we have on tradition that it's Zayin Adar, and even according to some Zayin Adar Bet. But therefore, what we have is within a year, we have the three of them passing away, but it's not on the same day. And again, there is this time lag. So maybe that does point more in the direction that their deaths were at the time they were supposed to die and is not necessarily due to any given impetus, as it were. And even Moshe and Aaron, no, they died in the right time. They just couldn't cross over to the land. And that is a separate independent idea. And as I said, the Al-Sheikh seems to feel more comfortable with that approach. So let's continue in the Al-Sheikh. He actually brings us along the way an interesting definition. Over here, I'll have it on the top of the page. V'huki hine bal hasharashim, that's the Radak, pirish omru miritem pi, that you were guilty of, and I kept translating that as rebellion, v'domelo milashun chiluf v'shinui. He says it seems like a switch. ובמקום יאמר על אשר החלפתם את פי, תמורת מי מריבה. You've caused an exchange to have taken place. Things should have been done differently, and again, because of your, you know, you can start using any of the words you want, because of your me'ilah, because of your because of your rebellion. But over here, you did what he's calling a tmura, she'chlaftem pi b'shvil mei meriva. So I want to try to explain a little bit about what it is that he's telling us. What should they have done at that point? They should have prayed. There should have been a prayer. What the prayer should be, any of you want, that could be your homework. You can make up the prayer that they should have said. Yehi ratzom of ne'avinu l'shamayim, right? L'teit me'mav bibracha, right? Say tefillat geshem at this point, right? Or something close to it. They should have said a prayer at this moment, praying to God. But instead of a prayer, which means notice something. When God says, request the water, he didn't tell them to go and stand in front of the people and call them rebellious people. By the way, that's also interesting, right? What does he call them? Let's go back and take a look. All the way back in the beginning, because maybe then the rebellion, the aspect of rebellion will be a little clearer, and maybe we'll say it in a slightly different way now. What does Moshe actually say when he gathers them together? God says to him, V'dibartem el ha'sela. Now, does God really want him to speak to the rock, or does God want him to do something else in front of the rock? So maybe I'm getting a little carried away, but as I said, the Al-Shech is taking us there. But what does Moshe actually do? He says, Vayomer lahem, he speaks to the people and not to the rock. And he says, Hamorim, rebellious people. So Moshe's rebellion is speaking about rebellion. She just realized this word rebellion has been staring at us the whole time, and we kind of ignored it. And again, I'm going to point out something, which, in case you didn't see it, the name Miriam is staring at you again. Just this connection with Miriam, right? He named Hamorim. So before we had, you know, Miriam, and here we have Hamorim, which is the same letters. So therefore, this connection of the sin or the water or the lack of water in Miriam should be a little bit tighter. But instead of speaking to the rock, they speak to the people, and Moshe speaks and says, Namorim hamina sela zenotzi lechemayim, will this rock give you water? So what he should have done is said something else. Now, what should have he had said in front of the rock? So now there's two possibilities. One possibility, he could have said to the rock, please, Mr. Rock, can you give me some water? I don't think any of you particularly like that. And as I said, the Al-Sheikh doesn't like it. But rather, what he feels is that something else should have happened in front of the rock. Not that you're speaking to the rock. By the way, realize how close that can get to Avodah Zarah, right? Worshipping rocks and so on. Please, rock. No. You stand in front of the rock and you speak and you say, Ribono Shel Olam, right? Master of the universe, please give us water from this rock. Or even better, maybe it's not even a rock, maybe it's a well which is dried up. Please give us water from this well. Please cause the water to flow again. Please rejuvenate this well and cause it to be able to give water once again, which means there was a tefillah that should have taken place. And I think this is a really important point, which is very easy to miss. Of all the things that Moshe did wrong, he missed a tefillah. Now, many people, you miss a tefillah, okay, so you got up late. Missed a tefillah, right? I got a call a couple of hours ago of somebody who missed Shacharit and had to daven Mincha, and there was a whole question that he asked me, which I won't go into more details, but was interesting. Okay, you missed tefillah, you see, you make it up afterwards, right? In the larger, you know, scale of things, how bad is it that you missed one tefillah? So Moshe missed a tefillah that he could have said, and God does not seem to be pleased at all that he calls it me'ilah. That the fact that you use this, now again, if you want to somehow get back to that Rambam about anger, you use this in order to let off some steam. You upset with the people who deserved it, by the way. You upset with the people who deserved this, who picked a fight with you, who picked a fight with God. And you yelled at them instead of saying this tefillah. So that's great, except you missed an opportunity. Yeah, one thing is maybe you have no right to be talking about Am Yisrael like that. I'm not even going there. You missed a tefillah, which I'm saying is such a subtle point. Can you imagine what this tefillah could have been? This tefillah could have been, God, You've been taking care of us. Go back to the way that Moshe described it in Devarim, because he gets it. That's exactly why I'm going back there. God, who has taken care of us throughout the 40 years, God, who's been protecting us in the day and protecting us in the night, God, who's been providing us with food and with water, we need some water right now. Can you please give us some water from this rock? You want to go back to the Midrashic point? Miriam has passed away, and the schut of Miriam, the great merit of Miriam, is why we've had the water. We don't have water now. Can you please give us the water anyway in the merit of Am Yisroel? Or even the merit of Miriam still. Please bring us some more water. And there could have been such a heartfelt bracha, tefillah, but it wasn't said. And that seems to be exactly what Moshe is referring to in the beginning of the Devarim, and that seems to be exactly what God is saying. Hold it. But what happened to this tefillah? You switched it. That's the Al-Sheikh is saying over in the name of the Radak. You switch this around from being able to pray to turning this into something which was not supposed to happen in the way that it happened. So again, that I think is far more interesting than we had considered before. And once again, that's the direction that the Al-Sheikh takes us in over here. V'domu la'loshum chiluf v'shinui. V'zeh yomar al-Hashem hichlaftem et pi t'morat mei meriva. You've exchanged saying something to me for the waters of contention. Shechlaftem pi b'shvil mei meriva. V'hu ki im ayu midabrim el ha'sela v'notein mei mav, lo yameha be'er nikrim mei meriva. It never would have been called the waters of contention. Ki et pi Hashem. It would have been called instead the place that one speaks to God. So again, I think that that's interesting. The Netziv will tell us something which I think will also surprise us a little bit. You know, when you think about Moshe and Aaron and who did the worst of the two, so it's really clear that Moshe did, right? Moshe is the one who hits the rock. Moshe is the one who insults the people. Moshe is the one who doesn't follow what God had said to do. So look at the way the Netziv nuances all of this in source 14. Al Hashem miritim pi Hashem, b'Moshe k'tiv b'parashat Pinchas, k'Hashem miritim pi b'mei meriva, l'akdisheni b'mayim leinehem. V'kan ba'aron k'tiv stam, Hashem miritim. Which means this point of Lakdisheni was missing. Moshe was commanded to do this in one of two ways. Either by taking the staff and doing some kind of miracle with the staff. Oh, now this is interesting because we never understood it this way. Or the second possibility is V'dibartem el ha'sela b'torah uvetfilah. So now you realize the Netziv is also following that same path. There should have been over here a religious expression bringing God back into the picture, praying to God, please give us water. And again, if you want to go to this point of the Me'ilah that took place, instead of saying, God give us water, Moshe seems to say, what, could we get water from the rock? God is out of the picture, which incidentally is exactly what was part of the problem by the Meraglim as well. God was not part of the discussion. I told you, I want to still get back to the Meraglim. V'asa Moshe derech harishon. So he did it the first way with the staff. Nimtza shelo avar letzivoy legamrei. Moshe didn't completely ignore the commandment of God. Elo shechadal lebor aderech hatov. Shaya b'zeh laktisheni b'mayim leinehem. He didn't do it the best way. K'muvar b'mokamo. Aval Aaron? What about Aaron? Lo yamishtatef be'esek hamateh klal. He had nothing to do with taking the staff at all. Masha'ein kenim bo b'tfilah. But if they would have prayed, haya hamitzvah al shneim, then they both should have prayed. Which reminds us of the day of the Chanukah Rabbi, or the consecration of the Mishkan. They both come out and pray together, and the Shekhinah comes and appears. Kamosha amar Hashem, v'dibartem el ha'sela. God said to both of them that you should be speaking or praying. V'im kain, if that's the case, and here's the surprise answer, Chadal Aharon Melasot Devar Hashem Elav Legamrei. That Moshe only partially didn't follow God, but he says Aaron is far worse because Aaron didn't listen to God at all in this particular sin. Which again, I'll say this was a surprise. I could say all of this in a simpler way, but it's superficial. That the Moshe Aaron relationship was supposed to be that Aaron speaks for Moshe, and therefore Aaron not speaking is a problem. But it's not just that; it's more than that. I mean, the Netziv is correct that there is a religious experience that was supposed to take place over here. This should have been saying the words of prayer to God, and then all the people see that it's manifest, that God is with them, that God takes care of them, that God is like a father carrying their child through the desert, which again, going back to that point that Moshe had said. Now, in source number 15, which is called the Shalal David, this is one of the many commentaries written by the Chida. One of the Chida's many names is David. So the Chida will tell us some things which, again, may come a little bit as a surprise, and he makes all of this a lot more complicated than we would have considered it. First of all, he notes a Rashi all the way back in Shemot Perek Vav. The Pasuk over there said, Vayomer Shema Moshe, Atat Tireh, this is for Perek Vav Pasuk Alev, now you're going to see, Asher Asela Paro, what am I going to do to Paro? Now, Rashi's going to quote a Midrash that focuses on that, now you're going to see. And Rashi says that now you're going to see what I'm going to do, but when it comes to conquering the land from the 31 kings, that you're not going to see. So he quotes the Rashi, Katav Rashi, Atat tireh ma sheni oseh leparo, v'lo ma sheni oseh le'lamed aleph malachim. But you're not going to see what I'm going to do later on to the 31 kings. So the Chida then says, Harei misham kvar nigzera gzera. If that's the case, the gzera is already there. I mean, there are those who take it all the way back to the burning bush itself, when Moshe keeps on saying no and no and no and no and so on. There are midrashim right there. Okay, you don't want to, fine, you're not going to go into Eretz Yisrael. But now listen to the way, again, the Chida nuances all of this. He says, therefore the gzera was there. V'nidchaku b'zeh, and therefore this is difficult. And he says, look in the ra'ein, and so on. He goes, ulini ata'ati, this is what I think is going on. Yesh lo medurashi katav yana lo himantem bi, because you didn't believe in me. Gila katuv she'ilu lechet zeh bilvad yu nichlasem la'aretz. When God says, oh, you're not going because you didn't have the right, you didn't instill within them this faith in me. If it wouldn't have been for that, they would have gone in. The reason it's stressed is this is why you're not going in, so no one should say, oh, Moshe and Aaron, they're being punished with everybody else. The whole generation died. They have to stay here with the rest of the generation. It would have been hakol divrei mutar, right? All of this should have been superfluous. The pshita ilu lo chatu yo nichnasim, right? Because had they not sinned by Meriva, they should have gone in. V'gam atzarech lomar tam kadei shelo yomer ka'avon shar dor midbar. I mean, why does this have to be said at all? De lule hach tam mei haytaim lo yikansu demachatu. Because what did they sin? I mean, they didn't sin with the people that sinned with the spies. Amnam be'emet b'mitzrayim nigz. Again, if this wasn't clear, it's about to become clear. The reality is they were ready. It was decreed back in Egypt that they weren't going to Israel. That punishment was only in place if the generation that left Egypt goes directly into the land of Israel. So, right? But what ended up happening? Aval achar kach kishechatu dora midbar, when the dora midbar ended up sinning, v'nigzar aleihem agzera, and they're the ones who then got punished that they couldn't go in, bitel HaKadosh Baruch Hu gzerat Moshe, kidei shelo yamru ka'avon shar dor hamidbar chatu. So no one should say that Moshe is not going in because his sin was like the rest of the generation. So if you didn't follow that, let me say it one more time. God decreed that Moshe can't go into the land of Israel already back in Egypt. But when the rest of the generation were punished for 40 years in the desert, at that point, Moshe, who did not do what they did, his original punishment was then canceled, and now he could go into the land of Israel. I'm not achshav, but now when he sinned, shechatu b'mei meriva, az nigzar leim hagzera shenit. Now they got the same punishment a second time. And at this point, God was not concerned that people are going to misread this and think that Moshe was everyone else, because it says it quite clearly, it was because of the sin. Now, in the rest of what he does over here, he goes back to the sin itself in terms of what it is that Moshe did. And I think part of the most important element here is what he says, where I have it bolded. Moshe didn't think the people were deserving of a miracle which was supernatural. He wanted it to look like a cause and effect. He wanted it to look like, I'm going to hit the rock and then the water will come out. That looked like somehow cause and effect. But he didn't want them to think that it was supernatural because he didn't think they were deserving it, because he didn't think that they were on that proper level for this. By the time he finishes over here, he's going to tell us about he was chashad b'ksherim. They were deserving of a supernatural miracle. And he says that the onus is, the punishment is, and that's right to the very end, v'nenash moshe midah k'neged midah b'masha mara piv shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'shkaga yansha chashad otam she'enim roin l'nes. That as the way that he says they're unworthy of the miracle, God ends up saying to Moshe, you're unworthy to go into the land in order v'ne'enash midah k'neged midah. Therefore, you can't bring the people in because you thought they're undeserving and they're quite deserving, and now you will be undeserving. So that's more or less the way that he will describe this. The Chtam Sofer is going to go back and finally get to Miriam and say, hold it, what about Miriam? Lo matzinu bikra shum tam al mitato shel Miriam achshav. Why did Miriam have to die? And he's going to go and tell us that this is the Gemara, or the Midrash, that says that three people are impacted by Lashon Hara. The one who says it, the one who heard it, and the one who was spoken about. And he says, and therefore all three of them die. So this is obviously a great Dvar Torah about Lashon Hara, and it goes, again, much further than we possibly would have imagined. But he does go back to try to explain Aaron nonetheless. But again, what did Aaron do? And towards the end, he said that Aaron is guilty by not doing anything, and therefore, essentially, he agreed with what Moshe did. He was the silent partner. Ach be'emet gam Aaron chata kan b'mashe hiskim l'Moshe lakot esel l'pamayim. V'yaro'oi she'aron yike oto pam shnia. Now, that's fascinating. He says, if anything, so Aaron should have hit it the second time, that Moshe shouldn't have done it twice. I think that one can argue at this point, because the whole idea of the staff was God said to Moshe, take the staff, not to Aaron, but what he tells Aaron to do is to speak, and therefore I would much prefer the approach that we saw before, that the problem over here was that Aaron didn't pray, and we're missing that prayer. Source 17 is of Yaakov Kamenetsky. This is one of these things which is a little harder to find, because he says it in Parsha Yitro. He says that, because it says by Matan Torah, now you're going to believe in Moshe forever. So he says this, and it goes back to the idea of emunah. And he tells us, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, but he tells us the problem over here is that Moshe deviated from the instructions of God. When God tells you something, you need to do it exactly, especially if you're Moshe. Because if you're Moshe and you change something, even the slightest way, then anybody listening or watching is going to say to themselves, hold it a second. If Moshe doesn't report or say or explain things precisely, the entire Torah comes into question. Maybe God didn't say anything about, now just fill in the blank. Once the trust in Moshe disappears, the entire Torah can go crumbling down. And that's the point of Yaakov Kamenetsky. And that's why he says, this is so severe. This is a rebellion. This is me'ilah. Because I've given you, I've entrusted you with the Torah. And now by you misspeaking, you are going to cause the Torah to be weakened. And therefore, that's really what the sin is. Which is really interesting. Because the sin is not hitting the rock, speaking to the rock, speaking to the people, not praying. The thing is, it's not following God's orders precisely, and that then can call into question the entire Torah, because if Moshe can't be trusted to do what, or to say what God said, what God told him to do, or God told him to say, at that point, all of Torah could be called into question, and that's the way that Yaakov Kamenetsky reads this entire episode. So, of course, it's not here clear what they did wrong, because what they did is not what they did, but it's the implications of what they did. So, again, I found that interesting, which will now finally bring us back to where we wanted to get to today. The Abarbanel. If you've never seen this Abarbanel, we're not going to read through the whole thing. You see, he goes on and on, as opposed to what's afterwards, the Ramban, who goes on and on and on and on. But what the Abarbanel tells us is the opposite of a bunch of things that we've seen till now, including Chazal. He says, V'dati b'zeh, source 18, Shemosh v'Aaron sh'neim nenshu b'avor avonot sh'asu, im Aaron b'avon ha'egel. Aaron, really, what he did wrong, it was the chet ha'egel. V'moshe adoneinu inyan ha'maraglim, and Moshe was because of the maraglim. Because that's the sin that they did. And this, it's not that the whole thing is a cover-up, but it's a cover-up. And what he's really saying is that just think about the consequences of those two things. Those two events. Again, Moshe is not responsible for the Meraglim. He didn't do, he sent them. Because he's sent, and they end up staying there for 40 years. Because they end up staying there for 40 years, you know, everything else follows. Because of the Chet HaEgel, again, incredible implications of these sins. And essentially his argument is, well, I think part of his argument will go like this. You can't convince me that this little thing of hitting the rock, which, by the way, according to Yaakov Kamenetsky, was much stronger than we imagined before, you can't tell me this little thing of hitting the rock had such severe consequences when the Chet HaEgel and the Chet HaMeraglim basically have no consequences. Yeah, Aaron was involved in the Chet HaEgel, but okay, bygones, that's all okay. And then Moshe's involved in the sending the Meraglim, but okay, no, Moshe really didn't do it. He says, no. Moshe and Aaron, or Aaron and Moshe, have responsibilities for these things. And the Abarbanel will put forth, really, try to make a very strong argument that that is what they've done, that is what they're guilty of, and God found a way to give out his punishment. But he says, come on, just think a second. It can't be because of just hitting the rock. It must be something else. So as I said, the Abarbanel does say that, which leads us to the Ramban. We're not going through the entire Ramban. The reason we're not, because as you saw, the Ramban goes on and on and on and on. And he does a really good job. And if you can learn one thing over Shabbos, learn the Ramban. Go through the entire Ramban. It's worth it. Because part of what the Ramban's going to do, he's going to go through everyone else's interpretation, and he's going to keep in mind almost all the verses that I've shown today. There's one or two he doesn't. And he's going to work through every single possible explanation and how it works through in the initial narrative and in all of the other narratives that are introduced, finally getting to his own understanding. So let's take a look at within the Ramban. First of all, he says, "Achet b'Moshe v'Aaron v'Meirva einu mitparsem b'katuv." He says, the Torah doesn't tell us what they did wrong. And that itself is important, which means just in case you think you got it, it's not there, which of course then can empower people like the Abarbanel on the one hand and like Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky on the other hand, if the Torah doesn't say it. So now we have to go figure out exactly what it is. And along the way, he is going to say he doesn't understand. And part of what he's going to say, hold it a second. The Einais Gadol B'Dibur Yoter Me'aka'a. If you're going to tell me the big sin was hitting it instead of speaking, really? He says, why? It's so much more impressive to speak than it is to hit the rock. They're both really impressive. If you're in a desert and have no water, and you say, listen, I'm going to get water for you now. Again, by the way, again, I would argue that the problem is that I'm going to get water, but I'm going to come back to that point again and try to say it a little bit clearer. He quotes, I'm going to just say he quotes everybody. He quotes the Ibn Ezra, and he quotes Rashi, and he quotes the Rambam, and once again, on and on and on. But one of the things that he says, and along the way he says, he also says there's great secrets involved in all of this, which is also one of the ways that the Ramban intimidates us ever so much. One of the things that he says, well, lefi da'ati, ha-heya ze l'she'ela, ha-min ha-sela ze notzi l'chamayim, im-lo, which is essentially he's saying that Moshe asks a rhetorical question. Will we take water out of the rock? So let's hold this right here, almost the end of page 9, and I want to read the question again that Moshe poses to the people. V'yikach Moshe et hamateh mifnei Hashem kasher tzivau. Right there he does what God told him. V'yakum Moshe v'Aaron et hakal p'nei asala, and they gathered people together, and again, v'yomer lahem, and he says to them, shimuna hamorim. Again, listen, rebellious people. Hamin ha-sela ha-zeh notzi l'chemayim? Now, what he said is, I don't know, do you like the word rhetorical over here? Is that rhetorical? Sounds rhetorical. Are we going to take water from this rock? So, what the Ramban is saying is that they missed something when Moshe says it like this in a rhetorical way. Let me go back to what he says, because he actually compares it to something which is interesting, and I have a suspicion that this is where Rabbi Soloveitchik got a certain insight. So he says again, "Lefi dati aheya ze l'sheila hamina hamina sela ze notzi l'chamayim imlo," which means it's rhetorical. "Ki akatuv pam yifresh b'sheila hein v'lav." Is there a tree there or not? Now, this is really good, this comparison, because he says essentially, and as I said, I know that Rabbi Soloveitchik said this, so let me go back a second. First of all, going back to the Chei Tamaraglim for a moment, when Moshe tells the people, go check out the land, go see the land, Rav Soloveitchik claimed that all the questions that he asked them were rhetorical questions. Is this a good land? And the way he said it was basically a shotgun would, I got a girl for you. Now you tell me, is this a good looking girl or not? Now that's not a serious question. That's a rhetorical question, right? But what's fascinating is the Ramban just now read it into that pasuk, right? Does it have trees there? What's the very next pasuk? Does it have trees? And that will reveal that it was all rhetorical. And when you get there, bring back the fruit. So once he says, does it have trees or not? It's really saying, does it have trees? That's the way that he said it. Now just go back, because he's saying that that's what was said over here as well. Can water come out of this rock? From this rock are we going to take out water? But there's a problem sometimes when we speak in a rhetorical fashion. First of all, I can guarantee you, there's a problem if you try to send text messages and be rhetorical, that no one's going to understand what you're talking about. There's a problem in writing. There's a problem maybe speaking in front of hundreds of thousands of people as well. What did he say? Oh, could we get water from this rock? Turns it into a question mark instead of being a rhetorical question. But again, I'm going to say it's fascinating that he linked the two things together. He linked together sort of exactly what the Abar Brunel was trying to convince us of, that Moshe's real sin over here was the sin of sending the Meraglim and not sending them with very clear orders. Moshe says it rhetorically. You tell me if this is a good land or not. Now Moshe is saying this in a certain way, and they come back and they say, well, if you're asking, no. That wasn't the question. I never ask if it's a good land. By the way, he actually says it. Shidduch. He actually says it. Is it fat or is it skinny? Right? He actually goes, is it gorgeous or is it not? What's the answer? She's gorgeous. What's the answer? This is your bashert. That's the answer. This is it. But the problem is the misunderstanding of the rhetorical question, and therefore what it causes is a question. Because a rhetorical question isn't a question, but a misunderstood rhetorical question creates questions. Now I don't know, is it a good land or not? Now I don't know, will we get water or not? Why shouldn't we get water? Is God with us or not? Which means that now instead of instilling emunah in the people and creating a kiddush Hashem, by saying this in a rhetorical way, now creates questions and now creates this crisis of faith which takes place instead of the opportunity of saying, as Moshe tells us in Ve'etchana, in the beginning of Devarim, and that's why it's so interesting. Because if you now realize what Moshe is doing in the beginning of Sefer Devarim, he's doing tshuva for this. He's saying, why don't they understand that God takes care of us? He's saying to this, God takes care of us. God carries us in the desert. God takes care of everything that we need. And as he's saying all of this, please appreciate, he's undoing the rhetorical aspects by the Meraglim, and he's undoing the rhetorical aspects over here, which creates a situation of hitting the rock as well, where it wasn't explained in a way. And then Moshe says, well, because of your lack of understanding, because of what has happened, because of your not having faith, we've now gotten into the situation where I'm to blame, because Moshe doesn't do it in the way that God told him to do it. So what I'm hoping is that, and again, just realize what we did today. I want to make sure that everything is clear. As the starting point, we looked at the verses, just how it's said one time, a second time, a third time, a fourth time, a fifth time, I think there was a sixth time, about where God addresses these issues about what happened. Some of the times actually is where Moshe is addressing what's happened. And that to me was actually the most interesting, because Moshe is telling over the story and he is fusing together these two stories. He fused together the Meraglim story and the story of the rock. And that's why I said right then, why would he do this? But now you realize that there is a common denominator, but it's not just a common denominator. Now think about the Abar Brunel on the one hand and think about the Ramban on the other hand. Think of the Abar Brunel saying, no, it really goes back to the Meraglim in terms of Moshe's death, and now go back and think about the way that the Ramban is telling us, oh no, these were both rhetorical questions. And in a sense, by telling us this, the Ramban actually gave us, I'll call it a gold mine, because now he allowed us to understand exactly what was going on over here, where how there was this lack of Amunah, this lack of Kiddush Hashem, because instead of creating this place of Kiddusha, of holiness, where everybody has Emunah and faith and understands that God is like a father taking care of all of our needs, somehow at that critical moment, Moshe turned it into a question, a rhetorical question with that, you know, that's clear. Just as it was back in Meraglim. He didn't need them to tell him if this was a good land or not. Moshe knows it's a good land. God told him it's a good land. It's like most of Jewish history till that point is absurd if it's not a good land. But this was a rhetorical question, and sometimes people get stuck on rhetorical questions, which is why never ask a rhetorical question that you don't want an answer to. Be clear with people who don't understand it. And I know that this could be very, very, you know, depressing to say, well, this whole thing came down to a turn of language. Well, you know what? I'd rather it come down to a turn of language than blame Moshe for something which was, you know, far more serious. And Moshe doesn't have faith. No. Or Moshe didn't have the ability of instilling faith. He did. But in this particular way, he said it in a way which was unfortunate. And sometimes when you're on a mission from God, we started before class today about Chicago and about the Romanians, so now we can talk about the Blues Brothers, that sometimes when you're on a mission from God, then you need to do it in a very, very precise way. It needs to be done absolutely the way that God said it. And again, thinking about where Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky added in, just think about the implications of not doing something in the precise way, especially when you're Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron. That if you say it slightly wrong, then suddenly people looking for excuses are going to start questioning everything because they perceive there to be some kind of daylight between what God actually commanded and now what Moshe told them. Hold it. That means that maybe this isn't real. Maybe I don't have to do it. And therefore the consequences are so strong. So again, these parshiot sometimes are very, very depressing. I hope that this gave us a little bit more insight, a little bit more understanding, and I think it really did come out of, again, combining the various commentaries that we saw. Do we have questions? Yes, Mark.
Thank you, Rabbi. That was outstanding. Just two questions that I actually have. The first one, just something that you mentioned in terms of when you mentioned Miriam and the Lashon Hara, the fact is that that could also be connected into if she spoke against Moshe and undermined Moshe, once she did that, then that everything falls apart.
Correct. As you mentioned. Clearly. So correct. Excellent. Right. Excellent point. Second.
Right. The second one, I've never noticed it before, because we have Hamina 8. Also, that's the very first time doubt is sown into the world. You know, that's I thought that would link in really well.
Okay. Mark, you're ready to write a book. I keep telling you.
Yes. Rabbi, you once mentioned that the reason why Moshe could not go into the land was that was because that if he did go into the land, then the temple would have been never destroyed and the Jewish people would have been destroyed. So it had to do with
right.
The Jewish people weren't ready for Moshe to be the Mashiach.
Right, but so I can't say but I can't say that every year. I can't say the same thing.
No, you can't. But where did that come from? Where did that come from?
Where does the idea it's very interesting because those who quote it claim it's a Gemara and claim it's a Midrash. I can't find it. The Orach Chaim quotes a Gemara. He says it. And he quotes a Gemara. If you want, I have in one of my books that I prepared, I have a whole long footnote on this with all the sources I have. Beli Neder, you teaching this? You need this? You teaching on Shabbos?
I would like this. I'd like to know where this comes from. Because today was the first time you gave a good enough answer besides that answer, why Moshe. And the one of that, what Yaakov Kamenetsky said, really satisfied me for the first time since that original answer that he couldn't go in, he was too great. But this, so now I have two good answers.
Okay, but you're going to teach on Shabbos? You're going to teach this?
No, it's too hot, it's 117 degrees. I'm not going anywhere on Shabbos. We're staying home. I'm going to teach Michael on Shabbos. We're going to read the Rambam. We have a
good, homework. Good. Okay, Belina, I'll send you that footnote.
Okay, thanks.